Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
Nine, ten.
It's not ten. You see, you're on ten here. Where can you go from there? Where? To 11. 11, exactly.
11.
Midway. So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
Talked about Theo Epstein's comments, or lack thereof, regarding the future of their pitching coach and the continued coaching chaos with the Cubs during these general managers' meetings. Some football discussion with Matt Miller and Ian Rappaport as well.
I don't know if you caught the Texas opener to the college basketball season on
Tuesday night. I usually wait on college basketball until like conference season because so much of it is so awful, with the exception of that Duke-Kentucky thing. That I had to say.
That was gorgeous. Yes. It was a must-watch. I was in and out of some things, but caught a little bit of it. I missed the minutes that really mattered. This from the finish to the AP story after the game. Andrew Jones got a standing ovation when he hit a free throw in the second half of Texas's opener Tuesday night. His first point as a Longhorn since being diagnosed with leukemia in January. Jones wasn't even sure whether he'd play this season. The junior guard checked in with 11:40 left in the second half, brought the crowd to its feet. Even though he's also recovering from a broken toe, Jones was physical, scraped for a loose ball, drew a foul, hit the free throw. It's just really cool. I saw the story. I thought we do so many stories in this segment about bad things in the end of the world, which I incidentally got a story about. But feel-good stories are cool, too, and good on Andrew Jones. He led the Longhorns for a stretch last year, like something like 11 or 12 a night, something like that. He is back. I think there's still a little bit of we'll see how much he's able to play. He's got the busted toe, but best of luck to Andrew Jones of the Longhorns in his battle back from leukemia.
This from Tuscumbia, Alabama.
Tuscumbia.
Sorry.
I have no idea.
Okay, you said that so with such certitude.
I thought I'd start digging in on pronunciations, and then eventually I'd get you to come around on raccoon.
Police in Alabama say a man not wearing any pants fell through the roof of a Waffle House during a botched burglary and then fought patrons before fleeing. So stay with me here, because you have questions, right? You have questions. Why?
I have all the questions.
Why is he falling, and why is he not wearing pants?
What happened to his pants?
There's good reason here.
Who is he fighting?
The Times Daily reports that Tuscumbia Police Detective Wes Holland, he's on the case, Wes Holland, says 27-year-old Glenn Bost is being sought on criminal mischief and burglary charges. Another suspect hasn't been identified. Police Chief Tony Logan says the Birmingham man tried to break into the restaurant's office through the ceiling. He went into a bathroom. He tied the door shut with his pants.
With his pants.
See, now we know. And he climbed up into the ceiling. An underwear-clad Bost then fell into the dining area and fought off patrons trying to detain him. Bost fled, leaving behind his pants that contained his driver's license.
Yeah. Yeah.
Police say, this is the closing line of the AP story, Bost may have been on drugs.
Why? He's probably on drugs.
Yeah, take the wallet out of the pants.
He's on the drugs.
You leave your pants.
You don't know that
he's
was my wallet.
Hepped up on goofballs.
This from Newsweek. Three asteroids will pass Earth in one day, and one will come closer than the moon.
What?
This Saturday, three asteroids will fly by Earth in quick succession, according to NASA. The first, which is to be an estimated 43 and 92 feet wide, will come as close as 861,700 miles to Earth at 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern Time, traveling around 23,000 miles per hour. I think that's an Earth ender, I'm not sure, or at least a catastrophic event. The second one makes its closest approach 15 minutes later, but much, much farther away, almost 3 million miles, still a very close distance. The next one, the final one, VX1, comes the closest to Earth, maybe as near as 230,000 miles. That may sound like a lot, but it's actually going to bring it as close as the moon.
So we don't want to blow these out of space. We want to just sort of wave at them as they go by.
Apparently not. And you have to imagine that as these things come close, these near-Earth objects come close, the math on it changes. So at some point, I would bet VX1 had like pretty decent numbers of maybe colliding with Earth or coming even closer than it did.
Well, we know that we've got our blunt force object that can knock a missile out, right? We just tested that. Midday Midway, we gave you that information.
VX1, it's the smallest of the three, between 26 and 59 feet, and it's only traveling at 14,000 miles an hour. So that one you could probably get by on. But we're going to come real close to death, all of us, on Saturday, and we had no idea about it until I read you this story.
There's all sorts of reasons to be fearful of the globe's rising temperatures that we've created for ourselves here. And if you think that South Miami Beach is going to be underwater soon or Venice is going to be subsumed, that's certainly probable. We've also heard about various plagues, be they locusts eating all our crops or sea urchins taking over the kelp fields and all of that happening. And it probably
it's an armed
is.
Conflict yeah, there, sea urchins taking over the kelp fields.
The death of the barrier reef, that's already happening. Well, Bloomberg reports this, and we're already seeing signs of this. People in New York and Boston are noticing a lot more rats. There's a lot, because this very slight difference, they're saying, of 2 degrees centigrade, which is, 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, is making a big difference in the overall gestation and ability of rats to reproduce. Do you know what the gestation period is for a rat?
5 seconds.
14 days.
Okay.
The gestation period is 2 weeks.
Sounds right.
The babies that are then born can start reproducing after a month. So that means in 1 year, one single pregnant rat, can result in between 15,000 and 18,000 new rats. Warmer winters will continue to dial up rat fecundity. So that is your issue that you maybe hadn't considered, especially for urban areas. I have been seeing plenty. It's why I don't mind that there are a lot of coyotes around us. We came back from hockey practice the other night. Big-ass coyote right there in the alley. We're turning in toward the garage. They're just standing there. And the good news is they love eating rats.
I've lived around your neighborhood for years, and I've never seen the coyote. You just have to get west
really?
Of Western. Yeah, I've never seen
all over the lawn at WGN there. Sometimes the bright of day.
Never.
Oh, yeah.
Never
there was
seen
a, there
one.
There was a red fox that lived there. There was a fox and kits, and there was also is it pups? Pups or kits? I don't know, whatever it is. And there were coyotes all over the place.
No kidding.
Yep.
Never saw
them. Yep, we need them to eat the rats!
This from Foxborough. The New England Patriots team colors of red, white, and blue are all over the team's facility, but on Wednesday, a new color joined the mix.
This is great.
Burnt orange. It's from Mike Reese, ESPN.
Yep.
Several players were wearing team-issued orange shorts in the locker room. The reason? According to players who were laughing at the lighthearted tournament events, too many were taking the old gray shorts home and not leaving them at the facility as required. So the hope seemed to be that players wouldn't find the orange shorts as desirable and thus would leave them at the facility. Or perhaps it was simply an easier way to spot those who might be taking
this
them.
This is going to backfire because the orange shorts are going to get their own kind of cool cachet because they're so ugly.
The cool kids are all going to wear the orange shorts now. Yep. And then the poor kids are going to be left with the gray shorts. Nobody wants the blue shorts, but somebody's going to have to end up wearing them. Everybody, so former players, Teddy Bruschi, all these guys have been chiming in on what they were taking the shorts for. Bruschi was apparently taking these shorts for years as his underwear, which is another. These guys are millionaires. The team makes billion. Bob Kraft is worth, you can buy the station 5 times over.
And Bob Kraft wears those blue shirts with the white collars.
Apparently he wears the blue shorts underneath too, the gray shorts. I don't know if a NFL team is trying to stop its players from taking shorts home.
I did not remember former Argentine boxer Mario Melo. Mario Melo apparently fought Michael Moorer for the WBA light heavyweight world title in 1990, and he was knocked out in the first round. He retired in 1998, and now he's permanently retired because he choked to death while participating in a croissant-eating contest in Buenos Aires.
Oh, no.
Or do you say croissant?
Croissant.
I think they go down easier if they're croissant.
Apparently not for him.
I went through, this is another little Mariano's thing.
They're also less likable if you say them that way.
Croissant. The Mariano's tuna on a Mariano's croissant is really good.
That's a sandwich?
And I had bought their sandwich because I was just sort of in a hurry, and I'm like, ah, fine, I'll buy this. And I took one bite, and I'm like, oh, this is really good. And it's the tuna from the salad bar, which is actually tuna, and not the tuna from the deli, which is albacore.
It's got the crunch in it. I don't like a tuna salad with the celery.
A little celery, but no sweet. See, I draw the line at pickle relish.
Oh, like raisins or something?
No, relish or like cranberry, the Whole Foods cranberry one? No. I bought a box of Mariano's croissants, and then I went to the salad bar, and I got a bunch of the tuna, and I had a meal. I had four of the tuna sandwiches on the croissants.
Have you had a cronut yet?
I'm not there with that.
Why?
Just a regular Paris croissant.
Croissants are great.
It is great. I'll
snap one from Starbucks every time.
Cronut is legit. What I grew up with was the Pillsbury crescent rolls.
Oh, are you kidding?
Deliberately undercooked.
Oh, absolutely.
My sister and I used to do this like on a Saturday night when we were settling in to watch Love Boat. We would get a cookie sheet out and bake up a batch of these, and just you do them just a couple minutes less than the suggested time, so they're kind of doughy and gummy.
Stretchy, gooey, that kind of thing. Oh, you do the pigs in the blanket in them too, right? Mom used to cook those. She used to roll the whatever, like little sausages, little tiny guys.
What is it?
It got a name. Little Smokies.
Yes.
She'd roll up the Little Smokey in one of the Pillsbury croissants, fry those up in the...
Hillshire Farm Little Smokies? I love those. I can eat an entire package of those things so fast.
Well, yeah, it's an appetizer.
Those also great in jambalaya. If you need to make a quick jambalaya and you don't have andouille, you cut those on like a diagonal, and they get a good sear on them, and they imbue your jambalaya with a smokiness.
My dad would watch a lot of golf on Sundays. He'd get up in the mornings, you know, we'd have breakfast or whatever, and there he is, just taking an entire bag of the Little Smokies, dumping them into a pan and like shifting them around. Do you want anything else? No, I'm good.
Nope. Get some horseradish mustard. You get a little
syrup.
Oh, no!
Oh, yeah. Just syrup right into the pan. Fry those bad boys up. Let's get some sugar.
Ouch. No. Ugh. You had me going, and then you harsh my buzz with that.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do?
That's the Midday Midway brought to you by Marvin Design Gallery by Evanston Lumber. They feature Marvin windows and doors for new construction, remodels, and replacement. Visit their showroom in Lake Bluff or find them online at marvinbyevanstonlumber.com today. I have the most unsurprising baseball story regarding a new weird general manager and an old weird baseball player.
It's perfect because I've got some baseball beef that we've got to get to ahead of Sahad of Sharma at 11:40, so we'll focus on those two things over the next 20 minutes or so. He's Bernstein, I'm McKnight. It's Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I guess we shouldn't be surprised to read this story, and it was my first thought when the New York Mets made the odd choice of hiring Brody Van Wagenen as their general manager, because Brody Van Wagenen was the co-head of the baseball side of Creative Artists Agency.
He's got a number of Mets clients, some of them much more.
Now it's like an escrow. Now they're sort of...
He's divested himself of his interests.
Yeah, you can't be an agent and a general manager. That would be a slight conflict of interest.
Watch him.
Yeah, because he's kind of an agent and a general manager, because remember... He was the guy who engineered the whole Tim Tebow thing. Remember? He's the guy that put Tim Tebow in which organization was it?
I believe it would be the Mets organization.
It would be. So he is now in charge of the organization that has employed Tim Tebow. And he did make it up to AA Binghamton when he's 32 or 33 years old right now. He had 273. With 6 homers and 36 RBIs in 84 games for AA Binghamton. And then he broke a bone in his right hand. But he has already been promoted to AAA. Tim Tebow, the former Heisman winner, will start this baseball season playing for Triple-A Syracuse, according to Brody Van Wagenen. He did not rule out the possibility that he would be on the MLB roster for opening day.
Tim Tebow is 30. He turns 31. Oh, I apologize. He turned 31 in August. He'll turn 32 this next August. You mentioned his numbers. 273, 336, 399. I gave Tebow and the Mets holy hell when they made the decision to sign. He's been good.
Okay, yeah.
No.
He's not a prospect.
Of course he's not. He's 30 years old. He's 31. But he's been good. You think about spending as much time as he has away from baseball. Mm-hmm. And then going back to playing baseball against dudes in A and double A ball with stuff, nasty stuff that goes everywhere with no control. He deserves a little bit of something. It's really been impressive whether he can hit major league pitching or not. I have no idea because apparently I don't know anything about it, but he deserves credit for the season he put together. And it might be a deserved promotion to Triple A. The only problem with it is he's 31.
Yes.
He's 31 years old. And when he gets to, won't the best part of it be Mets fans and their reaction to Tim Tebow?
Right. It's not.
If he gets to Citi Field.
Right. That's not.
They'll boo his ass.
Right. When you're talking about
that crowd will boo him.
It's one thing if you're going to work him through the Southern League or use him to market in some of these podunk areas that still worship him. It's not like New York City is wheelhouse for continued Tim Tebow love because he was somehow sent by God to redeem everyone for their sins.
They will boo him, and then he'll hit a homer, and then they'll cheer him, and then they'll boo him the next time around. Because I think Mets fans know that he's taken somebody's spot that could be something else.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Yeah, somebody else might be bad.
Well, that's a franchise that's employed Jose Reyes the last two seasons, so maybe they don't give a damn.
Chicago Wolves, fun fact. Through the first 11 games, the Wolves have the highest scoring offense in the Western Conference. The Wolves return to Allstate Arena Saturday to face Rockford and Sunday at 3 o'clock versus Milwaukee. Visit ChicagoWolves.com.
So I've got two baseball stories for you that are one broke last night, one's kind of going on this afternoon. I will let you choose. Do you want to do conspiracy theory baseball Twitter, or would you rather do Twitter baseball beef?
Let's do conspiracy theory, because if it's the same one I think it is, this involves the White Sox.
It does. Okay, so the photo going around on Twitter has been of one of the video ribbons at the United Center.
Right.
Saying Bryce Harper, 34, with a White Sox logo in White Sox colors.
Didn't they do this with Carmelo Anthony?
I think so.
I think this is a thing that is done at the United Center.
I think
sometimes.
We've also seen, right, I'm checking with Rick here. Rick, we've also seen there's a Harper jersey on one of the statues outside the United Center.
It was in that tweet. There was no picture of it.
It was in that tweet. Okay. There has also been, and my guy Penals on Twitter, who does some good work covering the White Sox, let this out. Michael Kopech has tweeted about his number, which incidentally is number 34. Kopech wrote on Twitter just a little while ago, I think, it's more than just a number. It represents every struggle I went through in this game, including mental struggles, mainly mental struggles. On my lowest days, I still daydreamed about wearing that number across my back with a crowd of people locked in on my every pitch for my debut. I'm not established yet. I have 14 and a third innings in the game.
Where's he going with
but
this?
I have made a fairy tale dream into a reality. No one can take that away from me, and the 5-year-old in me is proud. Given the opportunity, I will always wear my number with pride, whether that number is 34 or not. Thank you. And then he tags the White Sox. So the theory, I guess, and this gets crazy, and I fully endorse indulging yourself in baseball conspiracy theories at this point of the season. This is the time to do it. The whole during the 162, you have to be rational and fight. You know, if the mantra is it's always early until it's July, all that stuff. This dream, right? Get crazy, get weird. Penals on Twitter had wondered.
It's Patrick Nolan.
Patrick Nolan on Twitter, yeah. Did they come to Kopech asking him to change his number?
That's what I'm... You would wonder why he would feel compelled to put it out there about the meaning of that number to him. I don't...
Aggregate it.
Yeah, I'm not...
Twitter's a crazy place.
So are we saying confirmed? Are we saying bank on it?
No, not using the Bob Nightingale term
ultimately,
regarding Bryce Harper.
Ultimately,
bank on it. Yep.
We will change the number and you can bank on it.
If there was ever one of these superstars to just kind of say screw it, wouldn't it be Bryce Harper?
Yes. He's the 80s ski hill
thinking
villain
guy gif.
He's the guy who has, since he's 16, known that he's got the potential to get the highest contract in organized
sports
history.
Ski hill villain.
Oh yeah, these are really good memes. He was being held back by Ryan Zimmerman during a scuffle, right? And Harper's helmet comes off, big shock.
Of course. It's designed to come off.
And it's got a quick release hatch at the back where it pops off. You can see the salad. He's got the old school David Duvall shades
on.
Yeah,
the blades.
The wrap. Yeah, blades, that's right. From the late, mid-90s kind of thing, which also have like an 80s look to them. Mm-hmm. So Zimmerman's holding him back. The hair's all over the place, and he's coming after him. And it looks like the 80s ski hill villain from one of the movies is going after the good guy, and then his minion is holding him back.
What ski hill? Which movie?
Just, you know, from the general 80s, like from Out Cold in the 2000s was kind of a rehash of one of these, you know, generic 80s villains with the blonde hair.
See,
and
I always,
everything going
I always
on.
Think of Billy Zabka. I think of Johnny Lawrence or his character in Back to
it's
School.
It's a lot like that.
Which always had a Jay Cutler vibe to me.
Harper, ski hill. I'll show you the picture.
Okay.
We'll tweet it out there. It's... He's the guy who's always known what he's worth because everyone told him from day one in a way that not every top player has been told this. I mean, there's a handful. It's Griffey. It's A-Rod. He's of the elite status when the kid was on a cover of SI at 16.
Yeah,
so,
and then when you see Bryce Harper's dad, you get an understanding of of where he comes from. I mean, his dad is like this ball of testosterone. If you look at him, it looks like he sweats pure testosterone gel.
He'll be great as the White Sox hitting coach next year.
I like it. I'm willing to entertain some of the stuff.
Well, it's crazy. It's nonsense, and that's what the season's kind of for. Or that's what the hot stove season's kind of for. And I told Danny Mac this yesterday. Allow yourself to dream, whether it's Harper, whether it's Pichotto. There are a lot of reasons, good actual baseball reasons, for the White Sox to be as in on and allow themselves to bid up on either Machado or Harper. There just are. There really isn't a downside to either
helping out the market, being involved in the conversations, experiencing the chase like this, or ending up with either one or both of them, right?
There's no downside. And it is the duty of Rick Hahn as a general manager to get in on this conversation as best you can, because if one of them decides to go, all I've wanted in my life is to get the biggest contract in baseball history, and that's not as selfish as it sounds just saying it out loud. It's not, because individual accomplishments in this sport, maybe more than others, help the team in general. That's just, it's fact of the matter. So you get that contract, you get it on a team where it won't hold you back the same way. Look, if the Cubs have to maneuver around a whole bunch of good players and good contracts just to get Harper or Machado, doesn't it stand to reason that you've got to ask whether it's worth it because of what you might have to lose in order to sign him? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That conversation doesn't occur with the White Sox. It doesn't occur with the Giants. It doesn't occur with a bad team that's got plenty of room and a young core that can grow.
Our attention will turn to the Chicago Cubs in just a couple of moments. Sahadev Sharma is covering them in Carlsbad, California, at the general manager's meetings. Theo Epstein had things to say. Jim Hickey is twisting in the wind. It would appear he's a dead man walking, because they certainly haven't endorsed his return as pitching coach. And when you get to this point, I don't know how you can return now that you've been strung along like this. So we'll see what the impact is on him, the way Joe Maddon might feel about it, and everything else that's going on the player front. The latest on the Cubs, you'll get it next on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
it's out there now. It's been Hickey's not coming back. It's been thrown out there on the airwaves, and it's all over Chicago media's buzz today. Is he back?
Yeah, that's not a subject that I'm able to address at this point. So as soon as I am, I'll talk to you guys about it.
Well, okay then. Theo can't tell anybody what's going on with Jim Hickey, but that doesn't sound real good for Jim Hickey.
It's not an endorsement, that's for
it
sure.
It is certainly not that. Here to bring you the latest is Sahadev Sharma. He's on Twitter, at Sahadev Sharma. His terrific, thorough work is in The Athletic Chicago, and he's with us now on The Score. Hi, Sahadev.
Hey, gentlemen. How's it going?
Not bad. I was just thinking, as we were coming back from break and listening to that audio from Theo, it's entirely possible that I'm just spacing on this, and you're with him almost every day he talks. Can you remember the last thing Theo wouldn't comment on or couldn't?
I mean, I'm sure there have been things, but I mean, it's pretty clear that there's something non-baseball related, I guess, going on here, because both he and Jed were very, I guess the proper word is cryptic about what the situation is. They just wouldn't go into any detail and wouldn't confirm or deny anything that was out there. So, I mean, it's pretty clear that Hickey's not coming back. I think that's kind of been accepted by all of us covering this team. Why is not clear at all. And I don't know if we're going to find out, you know, exactly what's going on anytime soon. We may, if that comes out, but it's definitely not something that they're sharing at the moment.
I have a theory, and I want you to assess the validity of this theory. I'm trying to connect some dots based on some things I'm hearing. The meaning of the exit interviews to me seems significant here, because what I know was said about Chili Davis, I don't know that the same things or similar things were said about Jim Hickey. But increasingly, their lack of reticence to cashier coaches points to me, Sahadev, to almost be customer service, to almost be their players and their players' comfort, their players' ability to function best. They're listening to their players and maybe just trying to get them guys they want. And people can decry it all they want, are these players today or this, but it sounds to me like the player is the customer when it comes to these voices that they hear every day, and they're just doing right by them.
Yeah, you know, I think you could use that argument for Chili, almost no doubt there, that there wasn't younger guys didn't resonate well with Chili. His message didn't resonate with them. I think early on there were some missteps and it rubbed some of the players the wrong way, and he just couldn't recover from that. With regards to Hickey, I don't think that's the case. I haven't heard anything, but it very well could be. But like I said, I don't think this is because of the first half struggles with the starting rotation or really anything that happened on the baseball field. I think if whatever is going on, if it didn't happen, then Hickey would probably be back. I don't think they'd be making this change. They're not making this change, from what I've gathered, because, you know, a dozen or, you know, half a dozen pitchers came in the exit interviews and said, yeah, we just didn't get along with Hickey and he rubs me the wrong way, or his philosophies are just not the way I like to go about things.
So what's the budget for the Cubs at this point? How hampered will they be by investments they've made last offseason into this year's free agency?
I think they're significantly hampered. I don't have an exact number for you, but that $246 million luxury tax threshold, I don't think that's their budget. I think it's decently below that number, which means, you know, if you're a Cubs fan, I wouldn't be thrilled to hear that. It's a budget, and it's something that's created, right? But these are artificial limits, per se. Yeah. You know, I know it's a budget. I know these are real things that people in business have to deal with. But if you really wanted to, you could blow past a budget. You could change what the budget is. If the ownership wanted to, there's no doubt they could find a way to change the budget. They're just choosing not to at this particular moment. So it's not at the levels that I guess many of us expected it to be heading into this offseason. I think that's a big surprise for most of us kind of on the outside looking in. And I'm not even sure, I'm not 100% sure if it may have come as a surprise to some of the people in the front office, too.
Yeah. Let me just set the record straight here, or let's at least try. When you say an artificial, you know, budget, or at least what the numbers could be, we're dealing with, or are we, two different numbers. $206 million is at that point where you get taxed on the money. And if you're in the tax three times in a row, it's 50% or 30% for two, 20% for one. The 246 level is where you start to give back spots on a draft pick. Are either one of those scarier to them than the other? You know, is 206 the soft number, and is 246 a harder number, or do you think none of those really matter?
You know, I don't think it matters significantly. They're obviously over the 206. They're going to have to operate above that. Yeah. If not, then some changes are coming that we are not expecting or that we're not talking about right now, because they're going to have to do a lot of changes. And then you definitely should be upset if you're not going over the 206, if you're a fan of this team. I don't think they're working with that in mind right now, as far as we cannot go above 246. I really do think it's just, there's a number, there's a budget that the business side has given over, and it has nothing to do with the 246, as far as what I've gathered. It's just a number that's in that area, a little bit below that they've been given, and that's what they have to work with.
Jed Hoyer talked about communication with players, and he talked about the fact that their versatility and their depth are a strength, if you look at them as sort of the same thing, in that they can match up with other teams. However, it does appear that some of the feedback they got from players is the players want to know not only when they're going to be doing certain things in the batting order or in the field, but why, being saying, well, you're not sitting today because you're over four yesterday, you're sitting today because of this matchup or that matchup. We had a caller ask this question. I couldn't answer. Maybe you can. How much of an ongoing communication issue that arose last year was maybe due to the departure of Davey Martinez, whose job it would be to get some of that stuff from the managerial level to the players' lockers?
Well, from my understanding, there wasn't a huge communication gap as far as you're not playing tomorrow or all that stuff. I think that still was handled in a similar fashion, right? There was no issue with, oh, guy coming in, what? I'm not in the lineup type thing. There was nothing like that. It was more, I think you kind of touched on it in your question. They just want a little bit more explanation, I think. They want to understand what's going on. I don't think this is a change from year to year. I think this is just something that they're hearing because they lost, because of the way the season ended. Guys are going to be more willing to complain, I guess, and voice their concerns when things aren't going as expected. It's just natural, right? In 2016, nobody was complaining. Nobody rose those issues and said, "Hey, I should be playing every day," or it's a little frustrating that I'm not in the lineup. When you win the World Series, when you go to the NLCS three straight years, all those things kind of wash away your complaints in a sense. When you don't reach your goals or even come close to, when 95 wins and an early exit from the playoffs is viewed as a disappointment, the players are frustrated as they're leaving the ballpark for the final time, then you start to voice your concerns a little bit more. And I think they just got, I think they appreciated that feedback, but it also doesn't mean, well, now you get to play every day since you're complaining.
Oh no, I'm not saying that. I'm just wondering what made this such an important point that Jed Hoyer was going to. You know, he used the term "we need to be better." Yeah. But it was clear that he was talking more about the clubhouse and the dugout than he was the front office.
I think it's just a communication factor in general. They really are focusing in on how things are going as far as communication. What is the temperament of everybody? Are people upset about this? They're trying to figure out what every little detail that may have gone wrong over the past couple of years. Why didn't they have that edge? Why wasn't there, why wasn't there that sense of urgency? They're trying to figure out every single issue that may have happened and trying to correct it. And Theo didn't want to get into details, but they're like changes are coming in some fashion. They're throwing ideas against the wall on how to fix all these little issues, and they have some ideas that that they want to present to the players and then maybe change. He didn't want to get into any details at all. So it's hard to know exactly what was meant by that, if they're going to change the way they train, if they're going to change the way they run things in spring training, if just any sort of communication things are going to be changed. But some sort of change is coming in that sense. And I'm curious to see exactly how it plays out. Theo said it didn't sound like something that they were going to hide from us. It was just sounded like something that wait until it actually happens before we really talk about it.
Do you get the sense, Sahadev, that they'd like to resolve Jim Hickey's situation before they go about changing over anything on the roster?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Because you want to get that figured out as soon as possible.
But
right?
One doesn't preclude the other?
No. Well, first of all, I'm not sure if it matters, but not much change is coming to the pitching staff, right? You know who the starters are. The starters are going to be there. They have to make some changes as far as relievers go, add guys, create some depth, maybe find a way to add an impact arm to the bullpen. But I think it's just there's a sense of urgency to get it done because there are a lot of teams that don't have a pitching coach right now. So you have competition for that too. And my assumption is they're probably some guys that they wanted to pursue that ended up getting jobs already too. So, I mean, Derek Johnson was someone that was in their organization for years. They were the ones that were actually able to pry him away from Vanderbilt. He grew up a Cubs fan, from what I recall. And now he went and got another job with the Cincinnati Reds. So, he's not coming to Chicago. And I would have, 2 weeks ago, if I would have heard that Jim Hickey wasn't going to be the pitching coach, that would have been one of the first names I would have thought of to replace him. So obviously there are other bigger names out there. Brian Price is out there. John Farrell is out there. I don't know if they're going to go big name like that, especially an ex-manager sitting on the bench when Joe's on a contract year. I don't know if they want to do that, if they want to go that route. But,
well, Brian Price wouldn't be much of a threat there anyway.
So you're right in the sense that they just want to get it done. You know what I mean? They don't want this hanging over their heads much longer. Obviously, it's a situation that they're keeping closely guarded to the vest here. But that it's whenever it's official that he's not the pitching coach, I would assume they want to act quickly to get another person in there.
Sahadev Sharma, thank you.
Thanks for the time, guys.
Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic covering the Cubs. Hub Arkish is in the house. He is going to take your phone calls. We have open lines. Let's get that first bank all set up. Bears and NFL questions, comments, concerns for our football expert. 312-644-6767. Light him up! Hub takes calls next on The Score.